Thank you. Next presentation we have is Codeville, which I believe had its inception at the second CodeCon last year. It's written by Bram and Russ Cohen. Familiar names.
Okay. So Codeville started out as a proof of concept that I wrote. I was interested in version control in general, and in particular the problem of doing distributed version control, and how does one create a history-aware merge algorithm. This, it turns out, is a very difficult problem, and I thought about it for a few years, having no idea how to do it, and then I eventually figured out how to make one work in a reasonable way, and I spent a fair amount of time I really should have spent working on other things, coding up this proof of concept of Codeville. And that was made available shortly before the last CodeCon. And I put it up on a web page and said, this is cool, I have no time for it whatsoever, so it's just going to sit here until someone picks it up. So as it happens, Ross, my brother over here, thought it was interesting, and he decided to start working on it. So the bulk of development, certainly in terms of lines of code in the thing, has been done by him. And he will be doing most of the talking now.
Okay, so first slide, fairly basic. The motivation for working on this problem was, you know, the current systems all have various drawbacks. The most widely used one being CVS. I'm sure many of you are familiar with these problems already, but it doesn't understand atomic commits, so if you make changes to two files, it won't can get confused about that. If somebody else commits to the second one after you've committed to the first one, there's a race there. Merging, taking branches and merging back again, loses history information. It kind of all dumps it back into your main branch all at once, and you don't get the in-between states that happened before that. It doesn't consider changes across multiple files to be associated with each other. There are tools that go through and guess based on the comments attached to the files and the timestamps. Oh, well, these were really part of the same change, but CVS doesn't really know about it. File renaming. You can't do it in CVS without either losing the history or breaking your history by going and renaming the files in the CVS backend, which then means your previous states are modified. And it's centralized, so you talk to one server, you can't really go talk to another server after that. You're stuck on this one. So there's a few other systems. There's Subversion. It doesn't really fix a lot of the problems with CVS. I'm going to sort of hand wave over the other version control systems quickly. But if you look at the docs for Subversion, like you do SVN help rename, there's a little note that says this is implemented as a copy and delete, which means if I'm modifying a file, someone else renames it, and I check in, my changes vanish into the ether. They belong to a file that no longer exists. The merge support isn't any different than CVS. The front page of the Subversion website claims this. And it's still centralized. You're still stuck with one server. There's a few others like Arch, Monotone, BitKeeper, Perforce. Arch and Monotone have different workflow. They're harder to use, more commands to deal with. BitKeeper and Perforce are commercial, so that doesn't work for a lot of projects. Monotone is very interesting, but I'm not going to go into it now. But it can actually forget history points because of the way they get stored and transmitted between checkouts. So what did we want? We wanted an intelligent and robust automatic merge. So we want this to work, just sort of work automatically most of the time without any hand-holding. You should be able to branch and merge however you feel like doing it. So branches off of branches, merge back with a branch off of something else, and merge back again between things later shouldn't be a problem. Go ahead.
This is referred to as a history-aware merge algorithm in Subversion parlance.
You should even be able to do this between servers. So I should be able to update from one server, and a branch should be able to live on another server, and I should be able to branch and merge back and forth between them and keep them up to date. Standard operations, add, delete, revert, rename. Rename including directories. So if I rename a directory and somebody else has been adding files, they go with the directory automatically. And resurrecting of dead files. This is in addition to commit and update, which pretty much everything has. The UI should be as simple as possible. And a lot of these systems are just more difficult to use. They require a bit of training. Sometimes confusing things happen where you're not sure what just happened, and people end up throwing things away and starting over from scratch because they don't understand what state they're now in. And the performance should be good. You shouldn't have to sit there waiting forever for simple, common operations. So this whole thing is implemented in Python because I happen to like it and because the original proof of concept merge was done in it, and I didn't really have a problem with that. Python's good. It's easy to maintain. I can write code, write another version of it quickly, write another version of it, adding features. Just doing refactoring is pretty fast. Algorithmic, you take a constant factor hit for using Python, but algorithmic optimizations are a bigger deal for where things are at right now. And the performance is actually pretty good. And there are various things you can use to speed up Python, like rewriting portions of it in C. Psycho acts kind of like a JIT for Python. And for the storage format, I'm using BerkeleyDB, nice embedded little database. It means you don't have to configure another database. It gives things like B-trees, hash tables. And now it's Bram's turn.
So when I was figuring out how CodeVille should work, the first question is a behavioral question, which is, in this particular case where you merge these two files together, what should the result look like? Not what algorithm should it use, but just what do you, as the omniscient, like infinite amounts of computation designer of the system, want these things to do? And as it happened, all the examples that I came up with were whole file examples, right? Two complete files, and was figuring out when those two were merged together, how should that behave? And it turns out that's a very nice way of looking at the world. So CodeVille only does whole file merges. This is rather anomalous from other version control systems, which are based on diffs. They send around diffs and apply diffs based, I think, mostly on the history of how these things were built in the first place, that people started by writing utilities which used diff, and those eventually grew into real version control systems. So this was kind of a ground-up rethinking of how that whole system works. So it compares two whole files together, not just trying to apply diffs to multiple things. And it also only does two-way merges between files. It doesn't really have a concept of what was the last point at which these two shared the same history, because there can actually be multiple ones of those. So what it does is it takes the two files and it says, well, what parts of them in them are actually the same? And it figures that out. So maybe the first 10 lines of them are the same, and then there's a section that's a little bit different, that's of different lengths in both of them, and then the last 10 lines of both are the same. Now, clearly the merged together file should have the two sections which were the same in both, but the non-resolving section in the middle, you have to pick which one wins, or if neither one wins, escalate to the user as a conflict. And the way it does... sometimes you have some ambiguity where there's a section that's kind of repeated, so there are multiple ways in which you could match up sections that look very similar. So what it does is it figures between two files what's the longest subsection that matches up exactly between these two files, and then says, okay, that's going to match, and it recursively runs the same algorithm on the two sections before those big matches and the two sections after those big matches. This works really well, and it gets around some bad artifacts that you have in CVS and a few other version control systems, where a very small chunk of code moved from the end of a file to the beginning of the file will sometimes be interpreted as moving most of the file from the beginning to the end, rather than a small section from the end to the beginning. We thought about trying to make it so that they actually get flipped around in the history, and that was such a disaster, we just gave up. So there's no moves within files, but it does a good job of making as much of it as possible of it not move around. Now, the actual core of the history-aware merge algorithm is an interesting point. Essentially, and I'm going to say something slightly wrong. Yeah, faster. It labels each time you make a change, it comes up with a unique identifier for that change, which is essentially a random identifier. And it has a hit for each version of a file it has a list of every change which has ever gone into that particular version of it. It's just a very long list, and it's always growing. And then for each line, it remembers what was the last change which modified that particular line. So when it's resolving two things together, it takes the conflict section, and it looks at the section in A and all the line point and all the changes which last affected those, and checks to see if all of those have already been applied to file B. And if that's the case, then file B wins. And if the reverse is the case, file A wins. In the case where actually either one could win, we're viewing that as a conflict as well, because that's just weird and it shouldn't really happen. In theory, it could happen. We actually haven't figured out an exact example where it could happen without using some advanced features. But just playing it safe there. Now, actually, there's a subtle point in this in that you can't really just label each line, because then when you delete a section, you have a question of, well, what do you mark as having changed there? So it doesn't actually mark when a line was changed. It marks when the spaces between lines were changed. So if you have n lines in your file, you have n plus 1 what we call line points, which are the spots between lines, and that fixes the case where there was a deletion. So now that whole deleted section just marks this one line point sitting between the two sections that were left unchanged. Here's an example. These are two files which are completely different. There's no commonality between them. In this case, the whole entire file is a conflict. So you look at the changes applied and see if the changes listed on either one of these have all been applied to the other one. And in fact, this is the case. Version A, the last change in all of it was 1. And version B has included 1 in the list of changes applied, so version B wins. This is one where there is no possible clean merge, and it has to get escalated to the user as a CVS-style merge conflict within the code, because version A has had 1, 3, and 4, has 1 and 3, both as last things that were changed in it, and version B does not have 3 listed in its history. Likewise, version B has 2 as the last to modify everything, and version A doesn't have 2 in its history. Some notes about merging. It's fairly conservative about what is and is not a conflict. In order for something to be judged as actually a matching section, it has to have at least 2 lines in it where if you chop off the beginning and trailing white space, there is at least 3 lines left over from that. It could have gone for 2, but OCaml has closed parentheses, semicolon, as end delimiters for things, and I was worried about those matching up. This is to fix a very bad case, which can happen in CVS, where 2 files really didn't merge much at all, but they had lots of closed curly brackets in them, and you get this gigantic merge of closed curly brackets, which just totally are incorrect, and it's a disaster. It is. And as I said before, if you have an ambiguous clean merge that's treated as a conflict, in theory you could probably manually create a case where it could happen, and we're worried about that. And also an advanced feature called cherry picking. It's pretty easy to make that happen. So reviewing that as a bad case and treating it as a conflict rather than just arbitrarily picking one or the other.
Okay, so one of the other interesting things about this is the way the history is stored. This thing is based on change sets, much like BitKeeper is. So you have these monolithic change sets. It lists the changes to every file it modified, which changes it references, so basically what you were working off of when you made this change. And it sticks a couple of other pieces of information, like your username, comment attached to everything, and a timestamp in there. These things are referenced by SHA-1 hash. So in the list of precursors, which is all the changes that this one was based on, it just lists the SHA-1 hashes of them. And this helps for the distributed nature of how the history is handled, because it prevents different changes from getting the same number. File identifiers are also SHA-1 hashes to prevent collisions there. They're based on the change they were created in, or actually it's based on the precursors, because otherwise you have this loop problem where the hashes are based on each other, and their initial contents. So we've got this big DAG. It's a directed acyclic graph. There is a common root that everything starts with. So if you want to merge two different projects, they'll merge fine because they all point to the same thing. This is not like pointers going everywhere sprawled out. You tend to get these long-running branches. If somebody branches off, you get a fairly thin thing coming off of that. There will be a little diagram later on here. The server always slaps a new head onto every change that's committed. In this way, you're aware of all the history that's happened. So the DAG structure actually represents everything that's ever been done. You know, when things were committed back, when they were updated from, what the change you committed was based off of, so you can tell when people haven't updated before committing. So here's a simple example. At the top, there's the root. It's created by the server. Everyone's got it. And let's see. The first change was this person. So they checked in a bunch of stuff. It's based off of the root. There's nothing else here yet. The server sticks this head on it and says, well, it merges cleanly with nothing, the empty thing. Well, it's not completely empty. It's got the root directory in it. So the root node has something, but not much. Then somebody else made another change against whatever the first person checked in. Server sticks another head on that, says it merges cleanly. Fine, I'll take it. Somebody else comes along, and they didn't do an update before they committed, so they're based off of a previous version. And the server sticks a head on that, says it merges cleanly. Fine, no problem. And finally, this person continues modifying without updating from the server. So you can see they're based off of their previous change, not what the server has been adding. And this is all recorded in the history, so you get everything. And servers keep track of heads, basically. So you name a repository, and it's really just, here's the change that's the head of it. So there's a number of optimizations that went into this because DAGs often get bad performance. You wouldn't want to have to walk through the main DAG just to figure out, you know, what the contents of a file that only had 2 out of 1,000 changes that were actually relevant to its contents. So there's separate little DAGs for every file. Name operations are stored in their own DAG separately from the contents. There's some indexing, which I'm just going to sort of hand wave over for now, that quickly allows you to say, well, I've got this point in the big DAG. What did this file look like at that point? So even if that point is not in the mini DAG, you can find the point which represents what the file looked like at that time. And history points. So a server can host multiple repositories. So if you take a branch within a server, you tell it the new head, it says, well, I've already got that one. And so that's a constant time operation. There is a lot of problems in this breakdown to doing an ancestor check. So I've got 2 random points in this DAG, which are SHA-1 hashes. I can't do a numerical comparison. That's pretty worthless. But I want to know if one is an ancestor of another one. You can do this using a breadth-first search. However, this gets worst-case behavior if one is not an ancestor of the other one, because it has to search all the way back to the root to find that out. So if at every node, this is what we're doing, you store the longest path back to the root, so it's the length of all the paths of its precursors plus 1, you can then say, well, eventually you get to a point where you're closer than the other node to the root, so obviously you're not, or obviously the other one is not an ancestor of this one. And that lets you exit early. Now, this still has the same worst case behavior, but for the common case, it should perform well. And use ancestor check for saying when I do a commit, it can quickly figure out, okay, here's all the files that were modified, because it can quickly pick out all the changes which were not part of, which were not ancestors of what it already has. History display gets interesting because it's a DAG, and you have to somehow show that in a way that makes sense to people. Codeville makes an attempt to linearize them, so it will just show one change after another. It doesn't, just because one change comes before another one, doesn't mean that it includes everything that happened. You might get changes that were applied against a different or previous state of the repository. It only shows change sets where files were modified. It will also show something in parentheses, which is the clean merge head that the server put on it, because that represents a state the repository was in. So if you want to reproduce a build at a certain point, those are probably what you're looking for. Diffing. It shows unified diffs, because that's what I like and that's what I'm comfortable reading. The match function is the same one that was described earlier. It picks out the sections that are common and shows the minus, 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 plus, plus, plus. It tends to generate slightly more readable code because of the requirement that, you know, a single blank line is not going to match. So it'll show you a big section removed and a big section added, as opposed to little sections with this one thing in the middle, so you can see all the related code next to each other. Right now, the current state is you can pick two arbitrary points and it'll show you a diff. By default, it remembers the last change that it thinks a repository has. So if you updated from a repository, it records that. When you commit, it records that. When you commit, it won't know the clean merge head that the server put on it, but it'll know the change you gave. And I'll show you that in the demo. Checking out code. The clients do this password thing with the server, which I'll get to. It requests the head of the repository. So this is a description of the network protocol, basically. It says, I'm interested in this repository. What's the current head? And then looks at the gets the head, looks at the precursors for the head, gets the precursors if it doesn't already have it, and continues doing that until it has all the changes it needs. It then dumps them into its local database of changes, validates that they're consistent and work, and generates the local files based on that, and does any merging necessary if you happen to have local changes to files. As I said, the history is stored on the client. This takes up a little bit more space. It's a 3x space hit over just, you know, the code you already have checked out. I can actually get this down a little bit more. But this allows a lot of convenient things, like I can take this laptop and I don't have a network connection on it right now, but I can make changes. I can even generate change sets and hold on to them. I can sit there and browse the history. Server never has to do anything. I never have to talk to the server. So the servers also then, because it's the client's responsibility to generate change sets, only have to validate that the change sets they're being handed are okay and that they merge cleanly with whatever else it already has, and doing the authentication steps. It also means that the network protocol is just sending the diffs over.
Like with CVS, Codeville requires, in order for you to commit to a repository, that you must merge cleanly with it. So if there's a conflict between you and the repository, you have to update from the repository, fix the conflict, and then commit. Unlike CVS, it does allow you to commit without updating when there's a clean merge that has to happen.
Right. It's a little bit loose right now. So if someone else has modified a file that you've modified, it will let you make the commit as long as there isn't a conflict. I will eventually implement a switch so that the servers can be more strict than that. All right, so we need a way of mapping file names in the checkouts to the identifiers that are used for them that allow renaming and other operations. And you need to be able to find the contents of a directory for some operations. Like, I'm trying to delete a directory, I have to make sure it's really empty, not that somebody locally deleted all the files without telling the version control system. But in Codeville, the name and the parent of a file are properties of the file itself, not the parent. So the parent doesn't directly know what its children are. This information happens to be much easier to manage. It's in a place where you need it to check for various kinds of conflicts, but it means doing the operations I just specified are expensive. So there's some optimizations. Actually, the main thing is there's this big B-tree, which takes the identifier for the parent, appends it with the name, and that maps to the identifier for the file. And you store this for every name that a file ever had. So effectively, this data structure is storing the children of directories. However, this way, you can quickly verify whether that parent ID plus name mapping is current. So you can look at the name DAG, mini DAG for that file and say, well, does this still have the name right now? So you can pick any random point in history and check whether this directory is empty or what the full file name was for this thing at that time. Okay, conflicts are presented CVS style using, you know, those greater than, less than, equal characters. Name conflicts have to be presented in a usable way. They generally get done by mangling the file name. So there's an extension that gets stuck onto the end of the file, and sometimes there's a .info file. So basically, in this case, which is listed here, where person A renames a file, commits it, I rename a file, try and commit, it fails because there's a conflict. When I update, the file is renamed with .name conflict. There's also a .info file created, which has the remote name of the file, so it's what the other person renamed it to. So then I can decide what I want to do with that. I am forced to fix that before I can commit back. I haven't actually done that for the name conflicts yet. There's a million little things I haven't done yet. But. Right, so name conflicts have a lot of corner cases. You can have directories A and B. I can move directory A under directory B. Somebody can move directory B under directory A. If I tried to update, there would be a loop. Somebody can delete a directory and somebody else might add files to it. You can have a file renamed in two different places. You can have two files renamed to the same thing. These are all dealt with properly. They're presented as conflicts in what I hope is a reasonable way when you do an update. Local file system operations are even more difficult for update because it has to deal with the case where somebody swapped the name of A and B. It can't just rename A to B because it'll overwrite it. The intermediate state is a problem. There may be directories that were added, you know, directories that were renamed, and you have to get the order of when you create files versus the directories and move things around correct. And it should all be done correctly. There's a bunch of test cases that deal with all of this in the code. Authentication is done using SRP. It's a secure remote password. If any of you are not familiar with it, it's a way of exchanging it's a way of proving that you know your password without ever sending the password over the wire, even encrypted. So the server stores some verifier and a salt, and you do this exchange to prove to each other that both of you have the right information. And at the same time, you exchange a private key.
One quick note, there's a blue Honda motorcycle across the street that's about to be towed. So if it's yours, you may want to go get it.
All right. SRP requires several modular exponentiation operations to be done, so it's kind of slow, especially in Python 2.2, which is what I'm testing with. They implemented a more efficient multiplication algorithm in Python 2.3, so it's probably a hell of a lot faster there. But basically, I use SRP. You get this private key. You then use that to exchange some other private key. So that can be handed out to multiple clients as long as you're logging in as the same person. You can use that to prove to each other that both the client and server can prove to each other that they know it fairly simply. And SRP is also used to change your password. Okay, encryption, not doing it. Encryption is your problem. There's plenty of off-the-shelf things you can use, like an SSH tunnel or VPN or IPsec, or pick your favorite, but I'd rather not get into that particular problem when there's other ways of solving it. And for a lot of cases, you don't need encryption. I do provide protection against people waiting for you to authenticate and then inserting data into your TCP stream or doing a man in the middle and hijacking at that point. I should note that I'm claiming this is done. This is going to be in a release that will be done in several days, which I haven't finished yet. But before the end of the week, I will push out a release with this and an install script.
The authentication stuff hasn't really been reviewed by crypto people yet, so it might be tweaked once that happens.
Right. Okay, so at the beginning I claimed that other systems were hard to use, which means I actually have to pay attention to the user interface unless I want to stick my foot in my mouth. So several operations are similar to CVS, CVS update commit. The idea is to make it easy to get up and running without having to do a lot of work. CodeVille can run completely serverless. So if you have a project where you don't care about working with other people or distributing your changes and doing coordination, you can sit there generating local chain sets. And you can do that. I haven't done the things to make that really easy yet because I'm not promising upward compatibility with the format of checkouts, only servers. But you will be able to basically just set your username and sit there making changes and checkpointing and never have to worry about setting up a server. Merging is done through the update command. So through normal operation, you're sitting there updating from one branch, which is your default. When you feel like merging with another branch, you just update from that other branch, resolve the problems with it, and then commit it back to wherever you want the merged version to go. And as part of normal operation, it detects when you've been modifying files, so you don't have to explicitly tell it you're editing files. That obviously doesn't scale to really large projects, so I'm going to add another mode at some point where you do explicitly say, I'm editing this file, just so it doesn't have to sit there and check every single file in your checkout every time you do an operation to see if you've modified it. So, short recap, the current status is there's a network protocol. You're not allowed to modify this through local access. All changes must go through a server. So there's this API where the server can check to make sure you're not doing anything crazy. So, and it's because it's using Berkeley DB, it discourages people from manually modifying the history. It allows arbitrary branching and merging between servers. All the history is fully expressed, so you can see what happened at various points. You can see when things were branched, when they were merged, et cetera, et cetera. It supports add, delete, rename. Revert only supports the contents of a file right now, 99% of the time. There are very few cases where revert will fail even on that, but I'll get to that. And there is history browsing, so it'll show you the history. You can do diffing between different versions. There's still more that can be done there.
We're way over.
Are we? Okay, there's tons of to-dos. I still need lots of docs. There's a lot of stuff that lives in my head right now and in the code, which may not be readable. Okay, should I go to the demo?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to skip all the to-do items, which is most of what's left in here. So let's see.
CodeVille right now is self-hosting, and in fact, it's hosting the files being currently edited on Ross's checkout, which I think is a little nuts, but seems to be working okay.
Right. So I run it out of the files that I'm modifying, but this happens to be the checkout that I'm using. So I can do a status command.
Us to just cut the demo.
Oh. Okay, I'm being told to cut the demo so I can go to Q&A, I guess.
My question is, will you do a demo?
All right, so CodeVille, you can do kind of peer-to-peer stuff between repositories, right? Can you do that over email? Or do you have a way to do that? You have
There's a TCP-based protocol for syncing between checkouts and repositories, and it does not work over email.
My question is, will you do a demo of the system?
2 minutes to answer.
Okay, I can do a very quick demo. It supports normal commands, like if I want to see the status, it tells me which files were modified. There's actually two columns there. It'll show you renamed files. These are the ones I happen to be modifying because, like I said, the SRP thing is a feature that's going in very shortly. It supports showing diffs, like so. So you can see all these little changes that I've made in here.
It should look very familiar.
Right, it should look familiar. Broken pipe. Can show you history very quickly. History looks like this. The change numbers are shorthand for the 40-byte hex SHA-1 hashes. It shows you a shortest unique, but at least 4 characters of it. Hopefully that's readable enough. If anybody has any ideas about doing consistent numbering, I'm all ears. Let's see. Based on this, I can say, well, what were the differences between the first two versions that were checked in? So, what is this? And this is also borrowed from the CVS command line. So here's an older version and some stuff I added way back when. Changing some database stuff, lots of Python code. I can show you, well, I think that's about it for the demo because we're short on time. Questions?
Yeah, I'm interested in the merge, text merge function, and also was wondering if I was, as far as a demo or an example of it, and is that possibly available as a standalone?
All that functionality is separated out into its own file within the source. In order to use it, you have to have the kind of history information that it keeps around. So it forces you to believe in it in order to use it. You're stuck in its world in order to be able to use it. But that's there. It's merge.py in the source.
I'd actually like to note, the initial demo didn't know anything about history. It just stored the metadata it needed directly, so you don't need to store history for it. You can, as long as you track the metadata appropriately.
Have you guys seen Darks, another versioning system? D-A-R-C-S?
Yes, I have looked at Darks. Dark.
Their theory of patches that it's based on has some commonality to the system you described for merging.
Darks is fairly interesting. Its interface is much more complicated. And the Darks pages have a whole bunch of really interesting theory about patching and unpatching of merges and how one does diffs and proving certain things about how its diffing algorithm works. It's more difficult to use, and I am really, really unclear about what Darks does in the case of conflicts, so I can kind of see that Darks will do some really nice stuff as long as the whole history is clean, and it can apply and unapply patches in very sophisticated ways as long as that's the case. But what it does when it hits a conflict in the middle of stuff, I'm really unclear on, and whether it can handle that gracefully. But Darks is, in fact, good stuff. It looks pretty interesting.
So can I store JPEGs and pings in the repository?
Sorry, what?
Can I store JPEGs and pings in the repository?
So one of the things on a later slide that I didn't get to was binaries. And binaries are kind of a big question mark right now, because binaries fairly often won't diff well, like JPEGs. So if you throw a JPEG in there and then throw later versions of that JPEG in, the diff will essentially just be a new version of the binary. That can do some bad things when you're copying history around, because it makes the history fairly big. So I need to do a bunch of information gathering, and I need comments on why people like to check binaries in and how they like to use them.
Do you have any estimate before, or how long it will be before you recommend people use this on their own projects?
Well, I'm using it. I think it's usable right now. There are just a lot of little touches all over the place, like it doesn't support Unicode files and things like that yet.
There's also the protocol that's spoken will likely change a couple of times now before 1.0, and the fundamental history format might change like once. So once the fundamental history format stops changing, then it'll be pretty safe to use it. We can't really promise that yet. And then once the protocol stops changing, probably you can just go ahead and use it without worrying about much of anything. But the history format, because it's all secure hash-based and in a very simple format, it shouldn't be possible to ever really, really screw it up. So you don't have to worry about like making nightly backups of your CodeVille databases in case anything gets garbled. It's pretty secure. Although it could happen that there will be some bug which requires you to like run a utility to try and regenerate everything, which could be kind of unpleasant. So it's not yet at that level of stability. You do want a lot of stability out of your version control system, because if it screws up, that's a big problem.
Now, I actually do plan to provide a converter for when the repository format changes in the future. So if you start using it now, I'm not going to break you.
Three more questions?
The question is just, is there any tools now or in the future plan to migrate other other source repositories like CVS or Subversion or anything else to CodeVille?
I do plan to do something with CVS. I think there's a CVS to Subversion script in Python that I might be able to pick up and use, but I haven't done a lot of research on that yet.
It's not really possible to go from CodeVille to something else. Like, it might be possible to go from CodeVille to BitKeeper, but in general, CodeVille has information that like CVS and Subversion just can't support. But going from CVS to CodeVille should be reasonably straightforward.
Right. There are issues converting from a CVS repository, because detecting branches and all the changes that happen there is, yeah.
Any other questions down here? Up on the top? You guys have anything else to say?
No.
I can quickly go through some more slides if there's more time.
Okay, thank you.